Chapter 21. Amy. I rested my head on Dustin's shoulder and closed my eyes as he ran his hand up and down my arm. Guilt tried to wrap itself around that warm, satisfied feeling, and no matter how much I tried, I couldn't ignore it. I couldn't ignore the guilt any more than I could ignore how much I wanted Dustin and how perfect everything was when we were in bed together. Dustin finally broke the silence.
"What are we doing?"
I sighed. "I don't know. I really don't." He shifted onto his side and pushed himself up onto his arm.
"Is this just a one-time thing to get it out of our systems again?"
"Oh, Dustin, you are nowhere out of my system." "That didn't work before," I said softly. "Why would it now?" His eyebrows rose a little.
"Which leaves us with what?"
Closing my eyes, I shook my head. "I don't even know." Touching my face, he said,
"Are you even ready for something like this, whatever it is?"
"Even if I am, I can't stay here forever," I said, trailing my fingers along his jaw like I needed to memorize every inch of his stubbled skin. "You and I both know that." Dustin nodded. He closed his fingers around my hand and turned his head to kiss my palm.
"I know you can't."
"And am I ready for it?" I released a long, ragged breath. I couldn't even make myself look at him because his blue eyes and that flush of pink over his sharply defined cheekbones made me weaker than I already was. "I don't even know. All I know is I like it. Here. Now I like it."
"Me too," he said.
I ran my fingers through his damp hair. "I don't want to lead you on. I can only give you so much right now, and I can't pretend that isn't true."
"And I don't want anything from you that you're not ready to give."
"So what do we do?"
"Well,"
he took and released a deep breath.
"We obviously aren't so great at resisting this, so I guess we might as well enjoy it for what it is."
He leaned in to kiss me, adding a whispered,
"And not worry about what it isn't."
I wrapped my arms around him. "I like that idea."
"Do you?"
He grinned.
"I thought you might."
He leaned down and kissed me, then worked his way down my jaw to my throat. His soft lips and warm breath on my neck sent shivers through me. Digging my fingers into his shoulders, I said, "If we're going to do this at all," I bit my lip as his stubble grazed my collarbone.
"Hmm?"
I licked my lips and shivered beneath him. "You need to do something next time you go into town." He raised his head, furrowing his brow.
"What?"
I grinned. "Get more condoms." Raising my head off the pillow, I whispered,
"We're going to need them."
And there was nothing left to say. The relentless ache in my hips just made me smile as I moved horses around and went through my to-do list. After two more unsuccessful attempts at riding Blue, plus a solid week of nights in Dustin's bed, it was a miracle I could move at all. Needless to say, I wasn't complaining. Once the horses were fed and turned out and I picked out the stalls, I had some time before I needed to bring the horses in. Perfect time to go check fences around the property and see which ones were in need of repairs. I stuffed a handful of orange ribbons in my pocket. Then I put Blue's halter on and led him out of his stall so he could come with me. As he had the last several times we had done this, he plodded happily beside me on the way out to the back pastures. He probably would have been content to just go on walks for the rest of his life and not bother with all that riding nonsense. I started at the far corner of the property and worked my way along the westernmost fence, checking boards and posts for problems. The Kings were very vigilant about keeping their fences in good repair. That was why I was out here twice a week to check every post and board, so there wasn't a ton of damage. But one of the mares who was always turned out in this paddock was half termite, I was sure of it. Or maybe it was one of the yearlings. The damage was too high for a weanling. Well, unless he put his front hooves on the board while he chewed. Knowing some of the babies, that was a possibility. I tied an orange ribbon around a damaged post, making sure the knot was on the outside so no one ate that, too. The board below it needed to be marked, too. I pulled another ribbon out of my pocket, and as it rustled and fluttered, Blue didn't even flinch. Not long ago, he would jump out of his skin every time I brought one out, snorting at it and eyeballing it like it was a venomous snake. Now, he was too busy checking out the grass that was nice and lush thanks to the unusually heavy rains recently. "Come on, you," I tugged his lead rope. He grabbed one more mouthful of grass, then brought his head up and followed me as he munched happily. We wandered along the fence line, pausing now and again so I could jiggle a board or a post to make sure they were secure. A bird exploded out of a bush and shot upward. Blue shied away, taking a couple of steps away as he snorted and stared at the deadly bush. "Easy," I said, pretending the bird hadn't sent my own heart rate up a few notches. I tugged Blue's rope again. "Come on, it was just a bird." Blue gave the bush another wary look, then fell into step beside me. It was so strange to see him like this. Even the most bomb-proof horse would have jumped when that bird flew out of the bush, but a few weeks ago, Blue would have been halfway back to the barn before I realized what was happening. If I didn't know any better, I'd think he was reacting to things like a normal horse instead of one who was terrified of everything. Of course, there was still the problem of riding him. He was tense when we ground drove him, spooked at everything in the arena or round pen, and he flipped his damned lid all three times I had tried to ride him, as the bruises under my clothes could attest. But out here, he was a different horse. A completely different horse. I stroked his face. He was so relaxed right now, plodding along on his walks like a happy puppy. Stealing a bite of grass here, snorting at an odd chipmunk there, and occasionally nibbling at my pocket in search of a treat. This was not the same gelding who'd shaken and perspired in the round pen before unloading me repeatedly until we finally gave up. There was no round pen out here. No saddle, no bridle, nothing to scare him or bring back memories he couldn't communicate beyond his obvious fear. And I wondered, what if I could get on him out here, away from all the things that triggered his fight-or-flight instinct? Of course, being ridden at all could very well have been a trigger in its own right, but maybe he had been mistreated in a round pen. Or every time he had taken a bit, he'd had his mouth ripped apart. Hadn't it taken us almost 20 minutes to get him to take the bit yesterday? It was entirely possible he'd developed a Pavlovian response to the weight, the smell, or even the sound of a saddle. None of those things existed out here. It was a stupid thing to do, especially alone and this far from the barn. Deep down, I knew this, but something told me I had to at least try, just for a minute. I'd get on him, see if he'd let me stay on his back, and then I'd get off. Better to have someone else around when I rode a traumatized horse for the first time, just in case something went wrong. But he was calm, quiet, completely relaxed. Curiosity would kill this cat if I didn't at least give it a try. While he munched on some grass beside the muddy, well-worn trail between the pastures, I gave him some more slack on the lead rope and then casually moved from standing beside his neck to his shoulder. Then his back. After a moment, I reached up and draped my arm over his back. He glanced at me, but didn't seem too concerned. I led him to the fence. I didn't need a fence or a mounting block to get on most horses' bareback, not even the almost 17-hand warm blood I had ridden years ago, but I wanted to take it slow with Blue. Swinging myself onto his back from the ground probably wasn't the way to go. Once he was next to the fence, I clipped one end of the lead rope to the side of his halter and tied the other end to the other side, fashioning a makeshift set of reins. I laid the rope across his neck and positioned myself between Blue and the fence. I'd fixed this fence just last week, so I knew the boards and its nails were good and solid as I stepped onto it. Back to the fence, heels balanced on the board, I leaned over Blue, stretching my arms over him. He swung his head back, peering at me as if to say, "Just what do you think you're doing back there?" I reached for his face, keeping my other arm over his back, and let him sniff my hand. Once I was sure he wasn't in a panic, I put my hands on his withers and my heels on the next fence board up. I took a moment to steady myself and make sure he was still okay. Then I carefully brought up my right knee and inched it over his back. So far, so good. Just as I shifted my center of gravity from the fence's support to his, Blue snorted, jumped to the side, and I was on the ground in an undignified heap. Much as it would have been safer to have John or Dustin nearby, I had to admit I was glad to do this without an audience. I picked myself up and dusted myself off. Blue hadn't gone far, just a few paces away, and even as he grazed, he fidgeted uneasily as I approached. "Easy, Blue," I said, and when I was close enough, I stroked his shoulder. "Easy, it's okay." I might have convinced myself to just let this drop and try again another day, except he settled down faster than I expected. Way faster. One second, he was fidgeting and tense. The next, he was more interested in the grass at his feet than whatever it was that might have sort of scared him a minute ago. Not what I would have expected from him, of all horses. Not after the way he always behaved in the round pen, which was a far cry from this. Maybe it was worth a second try. I led him around in circles a few times, speaking softly to him and petting him until long after he had calmed down. Once he had, I lined him up with the fence and tried again. And once again, I was on my ass in the dirt. "Damn it," I muttered to myself and got up again. I brushed the dirt off my jeans and gingerly rubbed my hip. Damn rocks. As I walked him in circles to calm him down again, I decided maybe this wasn't such a good idea. He wasn't ready for it. Doing it out here was stupid, dangerously stupid. My eyes darted toward the fence. "Okay, one more try, just one more." I stopped him beside the fence again. "Okay, Blue," I said, carefully stepping onto the board. "I'm not going to hurt you, big guy, I promise. Just going to get on and see if we can do this." Of course, he couldn't understand a word I said, but he'd understand the tone. That, and as long as I was speaking, I kept him hyper-aware of where I was so I was less likely to startle him. Feet on the board, arms over his back. Carefully, slowly, one foot off the board and my leg pressed against his side. Pulling myself up. My arms ached and shook from exertion, especially trying to do this slowly, but I gritted my teeth and kept going. Blue tensed. I stayed as relaxed as I could, reminding myself with every heartbeat that if I stayed calm, he might too. The whole world seemed to come to a halt as I inched higher. Easing my leg over him, all the way over him. And I was on his back. We weren't moving, but I was on his back, and he was calm. I nearly laughed out loud, but bit it back as I gathered my lead rope reins. Then as carefully as I could, I leaned forward. Blue tensed again. "Easy," I said, smiling as I stroked his neck. "Good boy, Blue. Very good boy." Tugging cautiously on the lead rope, I brought his head around toward my leg. Then I released the rope and held out my hand. Blue sniffed my hand. His eyes flicked up and he snorted hot air into my palm. "See?" I stroked his muzzle. "It's not scary, it's just me." He searched my hand for treats and I laughed softly. "Oh, you must be terrified if you can think of treats, silly boy." Still moving slowly and carefully, I sat up. Then I shifted my weight to the left, to the right, to the left again. Reached up and patted his neck, back to pat his rump, forward again to pat his shoulders. He eyed me, but didn't freak out. He didn't shoot out from under me and leave me in the dirt. Now that I was on him and nothing scary was happening, he relaxed more than I thought he would. But we weren't moving yet, and curiosity was still killing me. I gently pressed my lower leg against him, just enough he could feel it. With the softest, subtlest nudge, I touched my heel to his side. He didn't move, so I gave him a light tap and quietly said, "Walk." He didn't move. I tapped him a little harder and said the word a little louder. "Walk." Blue tentatively took a step, then another. Twisting my body to the left, I tugged the lead rope in the same direction and steered him in a small counterclockwise circle. As we made little circles and figure eights out here in the muddy grass, I must have looked like an idiot, grinning from ear to ear, but I didn't care because I hadn't had a rush like this since the first time I took a horse over a jump when I was 6. Blue snorted and tossed his head. He was antsy now, but not in a spooky, flighty way. He wanted to go. And who was I to tell him he couldn't? I'd only intended to get on for a minute and see if he'd let me, then try again for a longer ride when I had Dustin around in case something went wrong. But Blue didn't want to just walk, and he hadn't tried to unload me, and what could I say? The girl who couldn't resist trying just one more time was the same girl who couldn't resist seeing what other surprises he might have waiting for me. Grinning to myself and hoping I wasn't about to get acquainted with the mud again, I kept the reins taut, not restrictively tight, but not flapping in the wind, and squeezed him with my legs. He hesitated, so I gave him a little tap with my calves. I thought he might explode out from under me into a full gallop or something, but to my complete and utter shock, he slipped right into a running walk. A perfect, smooth running walk, just like he had done whenever we ground drove him. Bobbing his head as he glided over the grass, he was relaxed and supple and calm, and it wasn't the wind that made my eyes well up like this. We were flying across a muddy, grassy pasture with no one around and no saddle and no fear. We were flying, and it was all I could do not to just bury my face in his mane and cry. In all my professional competitive years, I've been chasing the high that came from that first blue ribbon at a 4-H show when I was 9. Countless trophies, championships, even national and world titles, and I'd never been able to recapture that giddy, top-of-the-world feeling I had when they called my name for that tiny blue rosette ribbon. Not until now. Not much farther, and we'd be almost back to the barn, but I didn't make him stop. I wasn't ready for this ride to be over yet, and even as the arena roof came into view over the crest of the hill, I didn't turn Blue around. I didn't slow him down. I just let him fly.